When will you get your shot in the arm? We talk with those in charge of the coronavirus vaccine in the cities and a new push to make sure everyone is fed in the cities. It is slow going. Hundreds of thousands of people in eastern Iowa and western Illinois are waiting to get vaccinated against COVID-19, but only a few thousand doses have been administered. Priorities have been set, vaccine clinics have been created, and people are wondering when they'll be next in line. We talked with the chief operating officer of the Rock Island County Health Department, Janet Hill, about the vaccine's distribution and the prognosis of the coronavirus as we head into the spring. Friday, they had issued, 175 more doses for Rock Island County. How quickly did they go?
They were gone within about 2 minutes.
Yeah, and that's really an issue of frustration for a lot of people because they're clamoring to get this because they now qualify. What do you say to that frustration?
I absolutely understand it. I hope people can understand that phase 1B in Illinois includes about 65,000 people just in Rock Island County. We are a county that has a lot of older people and a lot of people in frontline essential work. So this will be the biggest hurdle of the pandemic for us, getting through phase 1B. 1C will be a fewer number of people than we have in phase 1B. And then by the time we get to phase 2, which is the general public, I think that we'll have plenty of vaccine to give.
Well, and let's be honest, I mean, you're learning an awful lot through these mass vaccinations already. I mean, the line of cars for that very first time out at Milan was extraordinary, and you've changed your process right now. It's really first come, first serve right now, and some people might say that's not so equitable.
Well, there is a massive scarcity of vaccine. You know, we have 143,000 people in our county, and each person would need to get 2 doses. So taking away the people who are not eligible through, because they're younger than 18 or 16, depending on the vaccine, you're still talking about a couple hundred thousand doses that need to get in people's arms. And it's just going to take a very long time to do this. And we just feel like that the availability is so small at this point that we cannot pick and choose and be fair, that we really need to make it more of a lottery system. Now, we understand that the technology is a barrier, and we are working with a partner to be able to get a phone line for seniors to register for the vaccine. Technology is not easy for everyone, and we want them to make sure that they have access to the vaccine also.
Because to be honest, if you don't have the internet right now, if you don't have a home computer, you're not gonna get one of these vaccines right away right now.
That's right. Our system is online, and we did that because there were very serious public safety concerns after our first clinic, when we had people lined up for miles in all directions. If there was some sort of emergency out in that part of the county, the first responders might not have been able to get to it. And that is, very concerning. So we're having to balance public safety versus public demand, and that's a really tough equation at this point.
Governor Pritzker said the first round of assisted living facilities should be done by February 15th. Is that what you're seeing in Rock Island County?
We are not part of the federal pharmacy partnership. That vaccine is taken off the top at the state, so we never see that vaccine, and it goes right to the federal partners, who are CVS and Walgreens. So, the data that the public is seeing on the IDPH website is what we know also.
We have seen the National Guard being called in, particularly in the Chicago area, basically to help in the registration and the help just to get the lines moving. Is this something that Rock Island County might have to turn to? Because you guys are you're swamped.
We are swamped. We're a staff of 50 people, and we have 10 nurses. And right now, nobody but the nurses can give vaccines. I am not qualified to give a vaccine. That's not my medical background. So the National Guard would be a very welcome addition. The governor has talked about, you know, doing that at several spots across the state. He has not specifically told us that we should expect one in Rock Island County. You know, we're not one of the population centers in the county. I would expect that most of those resources would be used in Cook County and the suburbs, but I certainly would hope that we could call on the National Guard at some point because we could use some help.
Let's talk about the mutations for a moment, because Dr. Katz, the infectious diseases specialist in our county in Rock Island and Scott County, well, more I should say Scott County, but I mean kind of the Quad City infectious disease specialist, is really pointing out that the mutations should not be something that we necessarily have to worry about, but they are being closely studied right now.
That's correct. And we know that there are approximately 10 cases that are known in Illinois. Last time I looked, they were all in the Chicagoland area. But that does not mean that we should not be on the watch for them. And the precautions are the same for these variants as they are for the original COVID-19, and that is washing your hands, watching your distance, and wearing a mask. Masking is being shown to be even more important with this because it is even more contagious.
Well, and you keep pointing out the prevention and the mask wearing and the social distancing. We've heard that over and over again. Some people are better at it than other people. Some people are just against it completely. We're also seeing that parts of Illinois and Iowa as well, I guess, are opening up more to business as we go through these different mitigation phases. Does it worry you that we always take a step forward towards opening up society and in a way that takes a step backwards as far as our health and COVID is concerned?
You know, I've talked a little bit about a balancing act, and you know, the business community absolutely needs a lifeline at this point. I mean, restaurants in particular and cultural institutions have been really weathering some tough times. So I understand the public's desire to be able to go out and do more things and for business owners to make their living. But we have seen in the past when we do open up that we have, you know, kind of step backwards. So that's why it's really important when people are, you know, patronizing restaurants and cultural institutions and gathering in larger groups, that they really must follow these precautions because the safeguards that had been in place are no longer there.
These precautions that Americans have taken because of COVID-19 is also having an impact on other diseases and viruses. People thought that maybe the flu might not be so bad this year because, you know, we're washing our hands, we're keeping a distance, we're being so careful because of COVID-19. Has that in fact happened?
It absolutely has. In the state of Illinois, flu is almost non-existent. Now, we do not track as a state every single case of the flu. It becomes a reportable disease when someone has died in a congregate care facility or is being hospitalized in the ICU. So as of last week, throughout the entire state of Illinois, 11 people have been hospitalized with flu in ICUs. That is unheard of.
Well, and that puts a little pressure, less pressure, it takes a little pressure off of all the other work you have to do. And as from a public health standpoint, COVID is all consuming for you guys. I mean, are other issues of public health taking a back seat right now?
We are still working all of our programs here at the Rock Island County Health Department. It has been a whole all hands on deck situation, absolutely, with COVID, especially on our mass vaccination clinic days. But even though most of our staff is at the mass vaccination clinic, we still have people serving mothers, children, and infants for WIC. We are still doing restaurant inspections. We are still doing private water inspections and sewage inspections because we do that because we don't want any type of other outbreak to be happening in our county that would draw attention away from our COVID response. So it really is basic public health prevention.
Well, and prevention is one of those things that kind of gets hidden in the background. I mean, when it comes to public health, people kind of take it for granted. Do you have a feeling that because of COVID-19, people have a greater appreciation of what county health departments do, as well as preparing for the worst case scenario?
That's right. Sometimes it's hard for people to understand what someone is doing to prevent something. They can't see what is being prevented if it has been prevented. And public health at one point, you know, said that we are the invisible shield. We're not so invisible now. I think people understand exactly what we are doing and why it's so important that we do it.
Well, we're talking about social distancing and wearing masks. Now people are saying that sometimes two masks are better than one. Address that and also how long you think that we're going to be wearing masks. Is it well into this year?
It is going to be well into this year. Dr. Fauci, who, you know, I look to as our leader in all of this, has said that we're going to be wearing them, you know, into the fall. And that is because we need to get herd immunity. And we don't quite know what that number will be yet, because this is a brand new virus. And as we talked about earlier, the virus is mutating. So there could be a point where we get everyone vaccinated and then we would have to give another booster shot. I mean, that is a little speculative at this point, but it is certainly possible.
Double masks?
Double mask. As uncomfortable and you know, people may not want to hear it, but Dr. Fauci is saying that double masks are important because the new strains are even more contagious.
Janet Hill from the Rock Island County Health Department. We're now into February, and some people are more eager to put winter behind them than others. Laura Adams is among those people, happy to see Illinois easing those COVID restrictions so she and you can go out and about.
This is Out and About through February 16th. This Valentine's Day, give the gift of original poetry while supporting local writers. Contact Midwest Writing Center about Bespoke Poems QC, poems on demand through February 28th. Check out the new exhibit at the Quad City Arts Gallery through March 20th, featuring the work of Elaine Rexdale and Keith Kaziak. Or head over to the Figge Art Museum for their exhibit, Blakelock, by the Light of the Moon through March 7th. Play, the story of toys, continues at the Putnam Museum through April 3rd, where you'll find out about toys from ancient times to today. Plus, check out their newest exhibit, Birds and You, through April 30th. Join Ballet Quad Cities for a Valentine's weekend performance featuring guest artist Malachi Squires. February 11th and 12th at 5:30, it's Burgers and Ballet. February 13th at 2, enjoy an afternoon of fabulous dance entertainment in the Grand Ballroom at the Outing Club. And February 13th, enjoy a three-course dinner and dance, also at the Outing Club. The Eagle Ridge Resort and Spa in Galena hosts their annual Winter Carnival, February 12th through February 15th, featuring all types of winter activities, including fire and ice winter shows, ice turkey bowling, s'mores making, ice carving stations, and more. Finally, the Black Box Theater reopens with the radio play Dick Tracy, February 11th. For more information, visit WQPT.org.
The Quad Cities is all in this together. We take care of one another, because that's who we are. So mask up, wash your hands, stay informed, and continue to support our QC businesses. We rally together while staying apart, so that in time, we can get back to the very best version of the Quad Cities.
At a time of COVID-19 and so much uncertainty, we could all use a couple little victories, right? That's the title of a song by Quad City musician Murray Lee Rice. It's part of the four-man group Rude Punch. But he joined us at the Black Box Theater in Moline to show us some of his solo work. So here's Murray Lee Rice with Little Victories.
Account is overdrawn, but someone. Sometimes it's all about little battles that are won. Oh yeah. Yeah, winning big sure would be nice, but worrying about it will put your heart on thin ice. At least I'm not 6 feet underground. Sometimes it's all about not beating yourself down. Now I've got a pretty cushy job, and it pays like a low budget lottery. But I still crave that perfect cup of coffee. Yeah, it's still all about those little victories. Oh, it's still all about those little victories.
Murray Lee Rice, Little Victories, recorded at Moline's Black Box Theater. The COVID pandemic has left a mark on the entertainment scene, but it also hit food pantries and food banks especially hard. Not only has there been a greater demand, there's also been fewer food drives thanks to schools being shut down and COVID restrictions limiting gatherings. Just how bad is the situation right now? We talked with Riverbend Food Bank Executive Director Michael Miller about food insecurity throughout the region. So the worst, I'm assuming, had to be April and May. How bad did it get at food pantries around our area?
Yeah, the need jumped 50%. You know, we went from like 105,000 people in need to almost 160,000 because of, you know, folks furloughed from jobs and kids home from school who would normally be fed at school.
So what's happened since?
I would say it's eased back about 10%. You know, the last time we kind of rechecked and that number, it was about 150,000 people rather than 160, which is still way more than the 105.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not its peak, but this will take us a while to recover from.
Well, and I know what you said to us back in, it had to be last April or May that we last talked to you when we were talking about who was arriving at food pantries throughout the area. I mean, your food bank serves so many different counties in eastern Iowa and western Illinois, and then you're all of a sudden seeing a whole new group of people making use of your service and your clients' services.
Yeah, there's really two points to that. First off, kind of one of the most heartbreaking aspects of the whole pandemic for us is the number of people who have never needed help from a food bank or food pantry before, and they don't know what to do. And so we're encouraging them to reach out. We want to let them, first off, it's okay to get help, right? That's why we're here. And we wouldn't want people to be reluctant to get the help they need. But the other thing is that, you know, in the past, hunger's been kind of a hidden problem. It takes some convincing to help people understand there are hungry people in America. And now with it affecting so many more people, almost everybody knows somebody. And so there's an awareness of the issue of people not having food in our community more than there ever has been before.
Well, and let's be honest, nationwide food insecurity, as it's called, it's been a growing problem, and it so much affects families and thereby children.
It is, and yet the shame of it is we throw away one third of the food we produce. So nationally, there is enough food to feed everyone. We're just throwing it away. And so, yeah, there's all kinds of problems we need to fix in society, but this is one we can put an end to.
You were talking about the fact that we have, of course, a new administration, the federal government. Is that going to be changing, you think, how you operate in the months ahead?
You know, there are different things. Everything's kind of in flux right now in terms of how things are going to change over. And there's a changeover at the USDA, and there are some different proposals. There's some different rules that were put in place. So there's a lot of things changing. And so we're just trying to stay in front of it, stay informed about it, so we can make sure the things we do here kind of best interface with those different changes.
But there were some federal programs that were put into effect in 2020 that kind of expired by 2021, and you were looking perhaps either for extensions of those or alternatives to those. What have you found out now that we're a full month into the new year?
Correct. So the two things we were most concerned about was that Farmers to Families food box, which had expired December 31. As part of that bill that went through right before Christmas, people kind of forget about that because it happened in the holidays. That actually extended that it provided $1.5 billion to the USDA, and they used it to extend that program. So Farmers to Families food boxes, which we have not had in January, start again next week for February through March. And so we're excited about that. The other piece was something called the Trade Mitigation Program, which has sunsetted, but that bill also provided $400 million additional monies for the TFAP program, which should function in the same manner. Now, we haven't seen those. We won't get the cash. We'll get the food. But we won't see that food for a little while, but we should have the Farmers to Families food box for the next couple months, and then hopefully we'll see that more TFAP food thereafter. So far, so good in terms of kind of alleviating that cliff we were concerned about with both of those programs.
Very concerned
expiring.
About. Yeah, well, and the thing is that you're kind of pointing out that there was a big cry for help from the public back last spring, and the recovery is much slower. I mean, it's not like an instantaneous, oh, we don't need your help anymore.
That's absolutely true. You know, what I will highlight to you and your viewers is that it took us a full 10 years to recover from the Great Recession of 2009. And we were just about there, and then COVID happened. So, you know, I'm looking forward to getting our vaccinations and getting back to being with people just as much as everybody else. But it's going to be years beyond that before there's a full recovery from the economic effects of the pandemic.
Now, we've been talking about outgoing food, but what about incoming food? Because 2020 was a real tough time with some of the major food drives either being scaled back or almost virtually canceled. So you really got the double whammy of both supply and demand.
I remember well, Jim, when you scooped me on not being able to have a student hunger drive. You were the first in the community to break that news. We've had to deal with that, both the hunger drives, think about when you're going to the stores and there's nothing on the shelf, then they don't have anything to donate to us. And so we just now we're talking about kind of restarting some of those donations programs that we have in the month of March. And so we're going to be reaching out to those donors in the month of February saying, okay, now let's ease back in a safe and socially distanced way to start building those donations up. Because we've been relying a lot on those government programs as well as purchase food to kind of bridge that gap.
Yeah, Student Hunger Drive, of course, is in the fall. And usually it's the postal workers that supply you with a great relief in the spring. Well, that would be the one that you're looking forward to. Have you heard anything about whether or not that will be able to be held this year?
Yeah, I don't have news about Stamp Out Hunger, but you always ask leading edge questions, Jim, and I'll be sure to follow up on that because we need to start planning.
Yeah, exactly. So what can people do right now? I mean, if somebody does want to help, and as you said, I mean, there's so much food that goes to waste or is thrown out. Individuals can help. You don't necessarily need a food drive.
Absolutely. You know, I say all the time, it takes three things to make this work: food, time, and money. If you're throwing away food that you haven't opened or haven't started to use, please donate that rather than throw it away. If ask wherever you're buying food what they're doing with anything that can't sell. Make sure they're donating. With COVID, we've had much limited volunteers, but you can still jump on our website, riverbendfoodbank.org, look where there may be some limited volunteer opportunities, or just get registered. So as we start easing our way back into volunteers, we'll be able to reach out and contact you. And then financial help is always helpful, just with these increased costs in COVID. We appreciate whatever anybody's able to. We're very thankful to the community. I mean, we've had to respond to that big need, and we would not have been able to do so without the support from the community. So I certainly don't want to cry wolf in that regard. Folks have been great about that. But anybody out there who's not plugged in yet and wants to can learn about all those things at the website, riverbendfoodbank.org.
And once again, it's not a question of pride. If you need help, you can get help.
Absolutely. Please. I know this is true with so many people. They think, oh, that's for someone else. It's not that bad. It might be pride, but it might just be selflessness in terms of just a discomfort coming to get help. And we try to just make this as easy as possible. this is why we're here. And I just really want to encourage anybody who's out there who needs food and doesn't have it, check the website. There's a map on there, all the places you can get food, the times and addresses. We make it, you know, at the mall food pantries, we make it really easy. Just drive up, pop the trunk, and we'll put that in your trunk. If you need food, please come get it. That's why we're here.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Michael Miller, Executive Director of the Riverbend Food Bank, and you can help out and learn more about the food bank by heading to riverbendfoodbank.org. And a big thank you to everyone who took part in this year's The Auction at Your House. It was a great success to help fund the mission of providing public television in Western Illinois. We want to thank all of you who helped out with the online auction, the many businesses and groups that donated great prizes for you to bid on. Thank you for supporting public television. On the air, on the radio, on the web, on your mobile device, and streaming on your computer. Thanks for taking some time to join us as we talk about the issues on the cities.